Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/FTSW. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
Well, hello!
Hello, Zuko here. But I guess you probably already know me.
You guys here for a rematch?
Negatory!
I think it's time I joined your group and taught the Avatar firebending.
Zuko, yes! Why would I be expecting anyone different?
Greetings, my good Hotman.
We've been through so many things together.
Baby, you're my forever girl.
It'll be okay. It's not forever.
That's what I'd say, too.
Hotman? Hotman? Hotman?
My first girlfriend turned into the moon. That's rough, buddy.
Hotman? Hotman?
I got a pretty good look at you.
Let them rot.
I'll take that as a thank you.
Stay flaming, Hotman.
Stop calling me that.
Shh. I'm trying to watch.
Hello and welcome to From the Spirit World, a legendary Avatar, The Last Airbender, and Legend of Korra podcast for DongWuFang.net. I am your main host, Mel, and today I am joined by Delaney.
Hello.
Sam.
Yo.
And Philip.
Hey, what's up?
Today, we're discussing, this is kind of an abstract topic, I guess. It's hard for me to, like, pinpoint with a name. It's basically, we're discussing, like, the dynamic of the Fire Nation Moira family, because they're kind of really messed up people. And I think it would be interesting to look at. Plus, I find Azula one of the most fascinating people on the show. And I seem to be the only one who felt bad for her in the finale. I don't know everyone else's thoughts. But that's been me. So. The members, just real quick, like, the members of the royal family we were discussing are Ozai, Azula, Zuko, and Ursa, and then we'll make mention of others. But those specifically, that specific family unit is what I want to focus on today.
It's a nuclear family.
Yes. So, Ozai. There's a better word to describe him than psycho, but that's what I have down in the outline. So, how would you guys describe his actions?
He's going after what his father and his father's father did. He's just continuing the war that he was kind of thrust into. And I don't think you can lead a war that the whole point is to wipe out entire other nations and not go a little bit crazy from it.
Yeah.
He also had a bit of an ego. I mean, he was the whole, what, the Phoenix King thing. And I also think he's a sociopath.
Yes, well, that's...
His actions are...
His actions are very sociopathic.
Not a nice guy.
No, he's not. I mean, I understand that he's doing this stuff because it's what his father did and his grandfather did, and he's just continuing. But he kind of takes it to a new level because, I mean, we don't know what their original plan was, but he seems to be the one who suggests, oh, we're going to wipe out all the other nations, we're going to burn the earth, and we're going to have this pan-fire nationism. Like, that didn't seem to be a thing that was happening, because they would just colonize places that they landed in.
They're just trying to end the Avatar, of course. They failed that, because, I mean, because I could see there was a setup, definitely, for Fire Nation domination, but not to the point where they're, like, because there's a difference between taking over and destroying everybody.
Yeah. Here's my thing with Ozai.
They had all but destroyed the Southern Water Tribe, and they were set to completely destroy the Northern Water Tribe. Yeah. So,
yeah. So I guess it is a little bit of pan-Fire Nationism, but Ozai takes it to a new extreme.
Oh,
my thing with Ozai, though, that's kind of interesting, and this kind of, I guess, ties in a little bit to his relationship with his children, is that he was a second child. And from what we understand, he didn't think Iroh was worthy of the title Fire Lord, of inheriting that title for whatever reason. I don't think he says. I mean, he mentions, oh, my brother's a coward, but it seems like this sentiment has been there before his lieutenant died.
I can see that being like the start of it, though, the cementing of that with the failure of the first siege of Ba Sing Se.
Well, here's my theory on Ozai, and you jump in, you know, when, tell me how you feel when I get done. But the thing is with him and his, I'm going to try to articulate this is the best way I can. The thing with him and his children is, you know, he is a second child. He thought the firstborn, his older brother, was you know, no, regardless of when it started, he thought he was unworthy, and he viewed himself as the better choice to be Fire Lord. No one else did. No one else still does. But he thought that. You have a similar situation with his kids. He's got this, his firstborn son, who he views as incompetent and inadequate to be Fire Lord for a variety of reasons. Then you've got the secondborn, who he sees as this, you know, this prodigy, and this, who she, you know, that's kind of earned. She is really, really good at what she does. So my thing with this is that, you know, he sees kind of, I guess, he sees himself in Azula in that he sees someone he views worthy, who was put in an unfortunate position of being born in second place.
I can see and I that. Think
there was a bit of Iroh as well in Zuko, because the whole reason everything happened was because he didn't want his father to needlessly sacrifice troops, and I think that was a sentiment Iroh would have very much agreed with. And he just knew better than to speak out.
I'd go even further and say that Ozai is jealous of Zuko because Zuko just was, despite how Ozai says he's lucky, unlucky, whatever, Zuko was lucky enough to be born first, even though he's not, you know, worthy. He doesn't have to work at things. He's not worthy. He's not good at all this stuff as Ozai views, but Zuko got to be born first. It's his natural birthright to become Fire Lord. And I see, you know, I think that's a little bit of jealousy and a little bit of annoyance on Ozai's part that it's okay. You know, he gets to be Fire Lord. He gets to be born first, but he sucks at it.
Though then again, Ozai hasn't exactly shown much respect for birthright so far.
No, he hasn't. But, you know, it's the point of the thing is that he was born first. He's the firstborn. And
he's resentful that his heir that he's supposed to have is kind of suckish.
I think he thinks it's not fair that someone like Zuko gets to be born first, while someone like him and Azula are in second place.
Well, at first I didn't really buy into that, like what you were saying, but now I'm beginning to think, yes, that's where Ozai's extreme dislike for Zuko could have come from, because he's essentially just a complete failure in Ozai's eyes. And of course, that's Ozai's fault, but...
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. You have to wonder when this started. I mean, I'm going to say Zuko was what, like 10 or 11 when we see him in Zuko Alone? Something around that? Somewhere between... I'm going to say somewhere between like 7 and 11 is where I'm going to place him.
No, he's definitely not that old.
And that's being generous on the upper end of that age. But anyway, I mean, we see it even then. I mean, yes, Azula is great, but I have to wonder how much of this is self-fulfilling prophecy. How much of it is Zuko is told he's not good, so he loses confidence in himself, he thinks he's not good, and how much of it is Azula being told that she's amazing and good, so she performs well, and how much of it is Ozai just seeing each of these things in either children. So
I feel like Ozai saw Azula's gift with bending and then just cast Zuko aside. Of course, Ursa, we have no evidence that Ursa didn't love Azula, but Azula clearly thinks that Ursa loved Zuko more. So we're seeing more of this mother and son interaction and the crazy father who makes his daughter crazy, and I feel like that's part of it.
And I'm sure, you know, Ozai didn't think Zuko hanging out with his mother all the time was some symbol of great strength.
No, he's essentially a mama's boy, and that's not... I'm guessing Ozai doesn't look fondly upon such things. And I mean, that's another thing too, because, what was my point? I don't know. I just lost my point. Anyway, Ozai. So that's another, I think, you know, this ego trip he has with turning everything into the Fire Nation and becoming Lord of everything might also stem from a feeling of inadequacy he might have had growing up, because it seems to me that Azulon maybe favored Iroh, and that might have been from the fact that Ozai was showing signs of being a psycho even as a child. I mean, the way he spoke to Ozai in the war room, I mean, it might have just been he was angry that Ozai was saying, you know, skip over Iroh, make me Fire Lord. But it seemed to me a little bit too that he liked Iroh better. he respected Iroh more, so I'm wondering.
Iroh was a general. Yeah, he was a praised general.
Yeah, Iroh is a leading general. He busted through the outer wall of Ba Sing Se. He supposedly slayed the last living dragon. You know, he's got a long list of titles.
So I think with that, Ozai is maybe, you know, like, I'm going to be the Fire Lord who ends the war. I'm going to be the first Phoenix King of all the things. And I think that's kind of like, you know, stemming from feelings of inadequacy that he may even share having common with Zuko.
Well, I had a thought just now. What if it's because we see Ozai's clearly very sneaky. I mean, well, we don't know for sure, but Azulon died and Ozai becomes Fire Lord.
Well, yeah. I mean,
I mean, that's probably being sneaky though. Because this has been going on for centuries. It's to firstborn son. But then Ozai all of a sudden becomes Fire Lord. Azulon probably knew pretty early on that Ozai was a sneaky little bugger and was like, I don't feel comfortable naming this person as my successor. So that was just my thought.
Yeah,
that he's sneaky.
I think Ozai probably exhibited signs in childhood that he was no good for anyone. On that front, Azula. If Ozai is psycho, Azula is really, really psycho.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate because she's psycho in a different way. You know, she's just... I think the root of her problem is also inadequacy, that no matter how adequate she feels in her father's eyes, I think she knows that what she gets from her father is not love. He doesn't love her. She's a trophy. She's...
a tool.
His tool, his puppet.
Before that, though, she was shown to be a very mean person. She played tricks with Zuko, with the apple, and
which
she,
is a
like,
little bit, I
messed
think,
with the turtle ducks and all kinds of stuff.
It's a little bit, I think, then where the nature comes in, because again, psychologists agree nature and nurture work equally. It's not someone's born with a disorder and for that reason they are this. It's equal amounts. You are born this way and you are raised this way.
I mean, look at Ozai. I mean, we know clearly that Zuko has more attributes that we would assume are of Ursa's, and then Azula's, like, all Ozai.
Yeah. I mean, I guess we could say that Azula's kind of, you know, sociopathic. If you want to diagnose her, she's probably a sadist. But she's not like Ozai, and I think that's her problem, is that at the end of the day,
she wants to be
inside.
Loved, unlike
in her inside, she is
deep down.
She is more like Ursa, and I think that might be what scares her a little bit too. Is that Ozai clearly never wanted to be loved by anyone, never cared if anyone loved him. He was enough for himself. Azula, that doesn't operate that way. She likes to think she does, but you know, as we see when Mei and Ty Lee betray her, she loses it. Because
that's the beginning of the landslide.
She completely loses it, and from that she's like, oh, they love Zuko more. My mom loves Zuko more. Everyone loves Zuko more. Ozai, and then even when she's like, when Ozai's like, well, you have to stay here and do this. She's like, you can't treat me like Zuko. So I think the thing is, she's apart from the fact that yes, she doesn't want to be treated like Zuko. She doesn't want to be kicked to the ground. She is more like Ursa in that she does have a need for compassion. She does have a need for love, which Ozai never showed signs of ever needing. And I think that scares her. Go ahead.
I mean, Ozai didn't... He was willing to sacrifice first his firstborn son and then his wife just so he could be Fire Lord. He didn't exactly seem like a guy who really cared about those around him.
Well, it's ironic that Zuko, who we see through the show, has inadequacy problems with his sister, and then we know Azula feels the same.
Yeah.
Because Ozai's clearly he's not doing his job to comfort either of his children and nurses, wherever the heck she is.
Yeah. So I'd say in Azula's case, I know a lot of people like to point out, like I said earlier, she's sociopathic, she's a sadist. I think, looking farther on this, she's more a victim of Ozai and nurture and how she was raised than...
She's lost.
Than
That's all I see.
Anything else. And even Ursa's at fault a little bit for whatever she did that made Azula think that she didn't love her. You know, that's Azula's problem, is that she is not like her father, that she does need love, she does need compassion, she does need companionship, and she's not getting it. Yeah, she equates fear with, you know, she's like, oh, they people fear me, they act nice around me. Yes, I have friends. That must mean they like me. And she realizes that's not true.
Fear does not equal love.
Yeah. And I think that what we see here is she's supposed to be 14, but, you know, whatever. We see her is her world crumbling down, you know, like everything she thought, you know, it's kind of like a typical, it's a magnified and much bigger version of a typical crisis you'd see in a teenager who realizes, oh, my world is not what I thought it was. You know, it's a growing up thing. Here, it's blown up completely because she grew up in a very twisted environment.
Yeah, I mean, she grew up everyone telling her she was special, but she needed to be better, and she, you know, good wasn't good enough, and then it all just kind of falls apart.
Yeah, I think that her entire story arc was handled extremely well.
Definitely.
Whoever was responsible for that did an extremely good job with the way she turned out.
Send them cookies.
We should, because she's because of the way, I mean, she's a terrible person, but she's one of my favorite characters because her story arc was just handled so well, and what ended up happening to her. You know, she wasn't the two-dimensional, not even two-dimensional, she wasn't the one-dimensional villain that Ozai was, where he was just on a giant ego trip. She had dimensions, and that ultimately ended up being her downfall, was the fact that there was more to her than what she thought and what everyone else thought, too.
She had a struggle, and, I mean, we see that, I mean, she struggled and struggled, I mean, from the Boiling Rock to the end, and then it culminates in when she loses to the Water Tribe peasant.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's the best of the best of the best, and she still loses.
Yeah.
When she's all hyped up on all kinds of power, and she still loses.
She's to on the sun tribe. Steroids.
And the shock of Zuko jumping in front of her, I'm sure, broke her, too.
Well, yeah, because
that someone would show sacrifice like that.
Yeah, for another person. No one would do that Yeah, exactly. She thinks in her heart, you know, I'm sure Ursa would. She believes she won't.
Or Mei would do that for her.
And I think even Zuko still cares about her, too, because even when he thought, she's like, oh my god, she's dying, and then it turned out she wasn't, and he was like, well, crap. But I think he also cares about her, too. And I'd have to say that she even cares about Zuko more than she lets on, particularly in the beach we see it. You know, she, as sadistically as she goes about, you know, puppeteering everyone to let out their inner demons, she does show, a little bit of compassion for Zuko. And she even, at one point during early in the season, warns him. She says, stop being an idiot, or you're going to get yourself in big trouble. So I think there is, you know, a level of compassion there for her
brother.
And
she also, you know, shows compassion for Ty Lee also in the beach when they're at the party, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And they're talking about boys, and she's like, you know, don't be upset, and they just kind of talk stuff out.
Yeah, that's one of the better scenes in the series, and, like,
you know,
think.
Typical Azula would be, you know, why are you crying? Stop crying.
Don't be a baby. Yeah, so, yeah. I love that. That scene.
Well, I feel like Azula is capable of love, for sure. Like, in her twisted little way, because, I mean, she's just such a complicated person. Like, the best example I have is Bellatrix and her, like, crazy love for Voldemort, but except it's like, reversed almost. That just deep, deep down, Azula cares.
Yeah. And she does, I mean, but she does love her mom, I think, beneath all the layers of crap.
Why else would it bother her then that she didn't love her?
Yeah, why does it bother you so much?
And then even when she's airing how she feels upset about it, she still tries to act like it's not a thing.
Yeah. So she definitely, I mean, I wouldn't go, I mean, I think, she, I don't know if I go as far to say that she loves Zuko, just because you don't love your, no offense to anyone who has siblings, I have a sibling, but... You know, it's you do love your siblings, but it's not the same as, you know, loving a parent. It's not same unconditional, like, love. Now, I have a sibling. Don't everyone assume things. I do love my sibling.
I mean, it's different. It's a different sort
A different thing. Like, she's not, for lack of a better term, she's not required to love him the way she's required to love her mother. And she wouldn't automatically love him the way she loves her mother. So I wouldn't go as far to say as she loves her brother. I'd say she has compassion for her brother. She cares about her brother. But she definitely loves her mom. And I'd say she has the same sort of compassion for her dad, just because she was so flipped out when he was, quote-unquote, treating her like Zuko.
I wouldn't even necessarily say that she has, like, some great love for her mother so much as she was disturbed by the absence of love coming back to her.
Yeah, that's true, too. It could be that she's not so much that she loves
or
her mom.
Or even just, like, a perceived lack
it is perceived. It's, you know, it could be a lack of thereof. I mean, one thing to equate it to, going back to Harry Potter, is, you know, you've got this character, Voldemort, who I assume you've all heard of.
Yeah.
What? Who's
What's
that? Sam, do you know who I'm speaking of?
Yeah, I do.
I'm just making sure. If Allie was on, she wouldn't know. And I'm not kidding.
I remember that.
But anyway, you know, Voldemort, his big deal is that because his parents did not love each other, he's incapable of love, and the fact that he is incapable of love is his downfall. And you've got these things called Horcruxes, where he splits his soul into a million different pieces by killing people. And the only thing that can save you after you've split your soul into a bunch of peaches.
Peaches.
That's peaches. Peaches. When you split them into a bunch of segments.
Fruit salad.
Into a fruit salad of Horcruxes. The only thing that can save your soul, is repentance, is understanding what you did wrong and
remorse,
and then you die from it. But it's okay because your soul is back in pieces. This is kind of, in a metaphorical way, I think her, you know, she dies kind of a mental death of an emotional death. This is her remorse. This is her realizing that what she was missing or what she is capable of, and she can't handle it.
She was just so calculated, and then for everything to fall apart. She's so meticulous about everything. Like, I would like to think she's OCD. Like,
yeah, she is. I'd say I'm not a psychologist. I have taken college psych courses, though. I think that makes me a little bit qualified. But, I mean, yeah, she definitely exhibits signs of OCD in terms of obviously she's not running around, like, turning light switches on and off every 5 seconds. But she's in need of control. And when she loses control, she flips out.
I mean, because that's her one thing. She doesn't. She doesn't get love. She only has control, and that's what fear is. It's control.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that's the only thing she has. That's it. And then when
it's
gone,
not even, like, a genuine control she has. It's just, you know, it's a very fickle thing.
Yeah.
Well, except,
know,
she
if
doesn't
you're a
realize that.
And everyone loves you as a leader, then they'll follow you even if you mess up. But if you're leading by fear, one little slip up, and there goes your power base.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing. She has never known love, so she thinks, oh, it's, you know, that doesn't work for me. People won't be controlled by that. I need fear. I need to instill fear in them. They'll do whatever I say. And then she finds out when May pops up and saves Zuko, she finds out that love is stronger than fear, because she says, I love Zuko more than I fear you. And again, Azula loses
it. And she's like, you know, no, he miscalculated, and everything is calculated to her. It's all very rational, very thought out, and meticulous.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, to that aspect, I'd like to compare her to Bones, but no one's probably ever seen that show.
I have
so.
Not, but I'm told I look like somebody on it. Not that that helps anyone right now.
Okay.
Yeah,
that is what I've been told.
Well, just, she's such a logical, methodical person, and that when something just, I mean, because she was challenged just so utterly by that she thought she knew everything, that she had everything figured out, and then her order is just broken when everything turns to chaos. She has nothing to turn to, and she loses it. I mean, because I just feel like she was
found
so structured.
Some power stronger than what she uses, and it's, you know, not something she's ever experienced, really.
And she had no defense for it. Like, she was completely unprepared for what happened.
Yeah.
She couldn't prepare herself mentally.
I think, if anything to get from this, don't ever assume that Azula can be explained by one word or one sentence, because she cannot. She is very, probably I'd argue the most complex character on the show.
I would agree.
So, yeah, she's for anyone who's seen The Avengers, she is like a bag of cats. You can smell the crazy, so. On that note, though, Zuko, her elder brother.
Bag of cats is...
Because, you know, he's nimble, like a cat. So he's one of the more not-so-crazy people in this family, although he almost ended up crazy like them. So Zuko, he, you know, as we talked about in the storytelling podcast, you know, he went from bad to good over, well, he had a, it wasn't necessarily bad to good. It was like a super roller coaster of bad, slightly good, slightly more good. Okay, we're taking 5 steps back. Okay, we're taking 5 steps forward. That sort of deal. But he, I guess, what is it about him that made him so against this sort of change towards good? Specifically, I know that an effect on this was maybe in his head, you know, his mother versus his father.
I like to think it's the love that he had for his mother that he wouldn't think, and the love she had for him. I would think that's what, like, what fought against him, fought inside him.
Honestly,
so much.
I think a lot of it was Iroh. I think Iroh can be attributed for pretty much every major, you know, good guy success.
I was thinking later, like, earlier, I meant.
Well, I mean, the thing that we see earlier with Zuko is that he, and I think that makes him fundamentally different than Azula and Ozai, in conjunction with love, love caused this, is that he has a respect for human life that they lack. Like, you see this when, he, you know, he throws the turtle duck, throws the thing at the turtle duck, and Ursa's like, what are you doing? He's like, Azula does it. And then we see it later in the war room when everyone's like, yes, let's sacrifice all the troops. And he's like, no, you can't do that. That's horrible. Yeah. They're human beings. I think that's something that, I think a mixture of Iroh and Ursa gave him, just because it stems from love. It stems from loving another person, respecting a human life, having love for another human life.
He cares more about people than he does about calculating, like Azula.
Yeah.
I don't feel like he had a real relationship with Iroh, like, as strong as it was before he was banished. I just feel like he was as much as an influence as his mother.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I think before he was banished, it was, the strong influence was definitely his mother.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting, well, though, that we never see her pop up when he goes to do something wrong. It's never like, what would your mother think if she knew you were trying to kill the Avatar? I don't think she'd be very happy with you. You know, it is in his later life Iroh who's the moral compass and not his mother. But I think, you know, he doesn't forget that his mother is the only one in his immediate family who ever showed him love.
I think Iroh and Ursa played different roles, where Iroh was the compass for him to follow. Ursa seemed more like the guiding hand that was explicitly, you know, pointing him out and giving him a nudge in the direction he needed to go.
Yeah. I mean, you could put it as Iroh was the father figure, Ozai was not. And he did the fatherly things. And then you had Ursa who did, because she is his mother, did the motherly
just,
things.
Like, the love that, just, I'm going to continue to say this, and I kind of feel bad for being so repetitive.
No, go ahead.
I'm going to try and say it differently. Just, because, as we said, that everyone, like, Zuko is the one who actually experiences love and is capable of, like, because, I mean, Azula is, but, you know, it's different because Azula is so twisted up inside. But Zuko, he openly loves.
Mm-hmm.
And he struggles with himself for a really long time. But I just feel like Ursa, her involvement was the love she gave him and the love he felt in return. That's what, that makes him so fundamentally different from the rest of his family, that he is able to feel compassion, that he can realize, thinking back, that everything that has been happening is wrong, that you can't kill an entire race, that, like, because there's that love, because being able to feel compassion, you have to know love. You can't just, you can't have one, you can't feel one emotion and lack the rest.
Yeah. I mean, and that's, this is kind of like the Harry Potter thing, too, where the fundamental difference between Voldemort and Harry was love. And that's the thing here, is love, because he loved his mother, because he had love for his mother, and his mother had love for him, he understood the value of a human life, which is something his sister, maybe she understood it, but it was buried underneath layers and layers.
Yeah, Zuko seemed much more open with it. Like, Zuko had, you know, a girlfriend in May, whereas Azula had a guy who was so sharp, he was going to puncture a ship and leave Million just to
She did seem a little bit, you know, flipped out, though, that she, they didn't end up together.
That was great.
I ship it. No, I don't. I wouldn't wish that upon anyone. but yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, it's, that's exactly what it is, to put it in one word, is the difference is love, that he had it and they didn't. So, and he's a fundamentally less complex than Azula, so, because he's not trying to hide his emotions like his sister is.
His big thing is all honor.
Honor. Yes, honor. That is the other thing we forgot, that he has honor, and nobody else does. It's just him.
No, he lost it. He
somewhere.
Didn't have it for the longest time.
But he got it. Him and Aang got their honor. Okay, so Ursa, the kind of, she's shown up, I think, in everyone's discussion here with all the characters. Is, the you know, she's not
person.
Yeah, she's not related to any of them, really, except for her children, and she is the only normal person.
Yeah.
She's Tommen. Tommen seemed pretty okay.
She's like the, in the movies, the straight guy who doesn't change, who doesn't change, who doesn't have a story arc for the sake of pointing out how crazy everyone else is.
Yeah.
Because, you know, she's the mom. It's kind of punny. But she's like the mother bear, you know. It's and that's her.
I get it, because Ursa.
Yes.
Constellations.
But yeah, I mean now. that's her thing, is that she's a mom, and she's a mom to both her kids. I mean, I take Azula's hallucinations for a fact that, you know, Ursa did love her daughter because she's a mother, and why wouldn't she? Even if her daughter's a psycho, she would still love her. I mean, that's how it works.
Yeah, I don't think she necessarily, you know, thought, oh, hey, let's go do, you know, mother-daughter bonding time.
Yeah. And that's, but, I think, you know, what
there was still that parental love.
Tripped Azula up, too, is that she saw Zuko and Ursa spending so much time together, having their bonding time, and she and Ursa never did that, and she mistook that for a lack of love. It wasn't a lack of love. Maybe it was a lack of like, because let's get real here. Like, parents can like one child more than the other, but they love them the same. Look, we're all kids. We all know it. So, Sam, chill.
Because I'm the favorite.
Sam's the favorite, and she feels guilty for being the favorite. But
I'm
come
the
on,
youngest, so.
let's get real though. That can happen. I'm not saying it happens in every family, but it can happen. You know, a parent might enjoy the company of one child over the other. It does not mean they are loved more. It just means,
because like and love are two
it's
different
like
things,
it's like your parents. Like, obviously you'd enjoy having one in the room more than the other, depending on your situation. Doesn't mean you love your parents, one parent, any more than the other. They're, like and love are not the same thing, despite what the middle schoolers with a crush will tell you.
No, that's like. There's a difference.
Like. I'm sorry. There's a difference between like, and love. Learn it.
Life
study
lesson
it,
for the day.
Embrace it. But anyway, yeah, I mean, I think Azula mistook a dislike of personality for a complete lack of love for herself, yeah. And that's not true. Ursa obviously loved both her children equally.
Well, do you think Ozza turned Azula maybe against her, maybe telling her things?
I think what Ozza, if he did anything like that at all, is maybe just tell her, oh, you don't need love, you don't need that.
You don't need your mother.
You don't need your mother, yeah. Yeah, you don't need your mother, it's cool, it's fine. Chill. You don't
just need
her.
Me because I'm crazy and stuff.
Yeah, I think if anything,
yeah,
he
your
just
mom
said,
wasn't a firebender. She couldn't teach you anything. You know.
Well, we don't know that completely, but yeah, it's probably sure she wasn't a bender. But I mean, I think that's what Ozai did, is say, you know, you know maybe once or twice when she was young, she went complaining to Ozai, oh, mom likes Zuko more than me, and he said, you know, no, it doesn't matter. You don't need love. You don't need that. All you need
is for baby smack.
All you need is your abilities, your power, everything you're prodigious in, and that's all you'll need. And she was like, okay, that's all I need. And she realized that it's not all that I need.
He probably taught her that love is a weakness.
Yeah, that's probably exactly what she was told, but at the end of the day, she did care that she perceived that she did not receive it, which...
And she's a little girl. I mean, she... For 14, if we're...
Yeah, she's not 14. I'm sorry. I imagine her at, like... At
I don't
least
agree with
17.
It, but it's fact. I mean,
I know it's fact, and it flips a lot of people out because a lot of people assume like she's like around Zuko's age. And
that's what I thought. Yeah. I thought she was 16, and I was like, 14? What are you talking about?
And I'm like, oh my god, what was I doing at 14? I was not doing that.
I was not.
I was not being coronated to lead an entire nation when my father went off to conquer the world.
Yeah,
that,
so I mean,
that didn't happen to me.
She's mature for her age, and at the same time not mature, because she does have very childish fears in terms of, and childish needs, so.
Well, abandonment, that's what it is,
because
of her mother.
Yeah, it's a fear
issues.
Of abandonment. Which Zuko probably has too. But not on the psycho level she does, because he was secure in the fact that his mother loved him, and he clearly did not give a crap at one point. After he got over it, he did not give a crap that his father didn't.
So. Of course, his was different too, because because his was, like, I'd say a different level, but also a different type, because he was banished. He was sent away.
Yeah.
So, as opposed to, I mean, like, Ursa honestly, left, but...
It seems like he almost accepted the fact that his, like, Ozai was not going to love him. Like, that just wasn't happening. He was more looking for his, like...
His respect.
Almost, yeah.
It took 2.5 seasons, but...
Yeah. Well, even with his banishment, I think, too, he was at a point where he's like, okay, well, if I can't have his love, I'll have his respect. Let's try this Azula's way.
I'll have my honor back.
If I can't have the compassion and love, then I'll just have the respect and fear from people and see how that goes. And it clearly didn't work out for him.
He just wanted his honor. He didn't even care.
Yeah, he wanted that honor so bad.
That's all he said. I must get the Avatar to regain my honor. Nothing about
yeah. That, if they had changed up that word a little bit, sometimes like, you know, like honor or regain respect or regain my place here or that, you know. But no, it's honor every 5 seconds. So clearly, it means something to him. But yeah, I mean, I think the issues in this family is love, familiar. It's an interesting family unit where there's a lack of love. There's kind of turns into a psycho pit of people. Because Ozai, Ozai clearly gave no craps that he was unloved or that anyone loved him. He didn't care.
Well, any mass murderer you study or you hear about, like 95% of the time, it stems from a lack of love.
Yeah, and it's not necessarily that they needed it or wanted it; they just didn't have it.
Because I mean, that's a very important to the development of someone.
And I think that is the basics for respecting and having compassion for a human life. It comes from love. It comes from experience.
Well, yeah, it's the fact that somebody cared for someone else.
That's the thing. It's the fact that somebody cared for you. You understood that and cared for another person as well. Then you respect a human life. You have compassion for a human life. You understand the value of a human life. And when you don't have compassion towards anyone, you could give a crap if you kill someone or if someone dies. So I think that's the issue here: is that love, lack thereof, and indeed,
love makes you kill things.
Yes. Yes. Yep. Like Ursa, who is heavily hinted to have assassinated the Fire Lord. She's protecting your child. Anyone would do it. alright, so yeah, that's the thing, is you can't write these people off as one... I mean, Ozai you probably could. But Azula's
definitely...
You cannot write off as one thing, as having a mental disorder, because she's got mental disorders on top of the way she was raised, on top of issues, on top of cats.
And we compared it to Bellatrix, and I would just like to say that I personally think Azula is much more complex than Bellatrix, because Bellatrix is in... I mean, there was something caused her to be crazy, but we can actually pinpoint Azula's...
Yeah, we can pinpoint the moment... And where Azula went crazy, and we can pinpoint what in Azula's childhood caused her to flip out in that
we
moment.
We see the complexity, unlike Bellatrix, we just see her as crazy.
Because the thing is with Azula is that she is a complete character. Not to say other people aren't, but she in the show is the most developed, in my opinion, the most interesting arc. Just a complete character who we know why they act like they do. We see why they act like they do.
The whole backstory. It's, you know, there is enough for us to do a whole discussion about.
Yeah, I mean, we could probably have an entire podcast, but an entire mini cast on Azula by herself.
Yes.
So yeah, I mean, that's what we got out of that. We hope.
We see different aspects of her, unlike other characters. We see all the aspects of her.
Yeah,
with the beach, all sides.
She's like a Rubik's cube. We see
Rubik's cube,
all the edges and the sides. So yeah, I hope you got out of that what we did. And again, you fanfiction writers, pay attention, because some of you,
everything we say is important to you.
Everything we say is important to you, and some of you I might have to have a talk with.
I'm oddly afraid because I was like afterlife and spirit.
No, I don't care about that. It's characterization. I need good.
Oh, yes.
Anyway.
Azula doesn't have depth, makes me angry.
Yeah, no. She's not just a psycho. There's a reason for what she does
and why
she does it.
She's amazing.
Okay. She's a wonderful character. So, I didn't do this on the last podcast either. Wow. And this might sound ridiculous. Okay, let me explain something real quick. I keep referring to the last podcast because I recorded 2 in a row. However, you might hear them months apart because...
The magic of editing.
Because the magic of... editing and
hoarding minicasts.
And hoarding minicasts, because some of us are in college. So when I refer to last podcast, just ignore it. It's just a mental note for myself. But anyway.
Or we're all crazy. Take your pick.
On that note, I have been your main host, Mel. My co-hosts, my co-hosts have been Sam. My mini hosts have been Delaney and Philip. Dylan produces, edits, does everything, blah, 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 with the podcast. DF is owned by Jake. And what are we going to end on?
Armchair psychology.
Armchair psychology.
Okay.
All right, ready? 1, 2, 3. Armchair psychology.
Hello and welcome to From the Spirit World, a legendary Avatar The Last Airbender and the Legend of Korra podcast for DongBuFang.net. If you want extensive in-depth discussion on Korra from longtime knowledgeable fans of Avatar and longtime fandom members, then this is the podcast for you. I am your main host, Dylan, and today I'm joined by mini-hosts Ari.
Hi.
Colin.
That's me.
Lem.
Yep, hi.
And Derek.
Hey.
And Derek. This is his first minicast. He is Burning Lizard on DF.
Mm-hmm.
This is a minicast where we discuss a single Avatar Korra topic for a brief period of time. Today, we will be discussing the question, what if Avatar was a live-action show? That question comes courtesy of Sam, who I asked for topics on this, and that's what she gave me. So that's what we're going with here. It's a little bit silly, but hopefully we can also get into some serious discussion on, like, the differences between animation and live action and such like that, and things like that. I guess the place I want to start is, would it even be possible for Avatar to be a live action show?
You definitely could do it, but it just depends, like, what kind of channel it was on. I feel like if it was, like, an HBO channel, like an HBO show, might be way better, but it just depends on the channel and the funding.
Yeah, it would be possible, but chances are it would not, at least as far as the special effects go, it wouldn't be all that great, just because, I mean, let's be honest, we saw the kind of special effects we got out of big budget Hollywood movies, so I'm not so sure whether a TV show would be able to pull off something that would be as visually appealing as the cartoon.
I don't know. I think the effects in the movie were good enough for like a live-action TV show to be produced with those effects, yeah. I thought.
Well, that is, though, there's no way we're going to get the same budget that we had for that movie, the same production values for that movie that cost, what, like, $100 million, I think?
Yeah, I think.
A TV show. So there's no way the visual effects would be as good as the movie. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
We would get, like, half, at least, the effects we got on the movie. Which, so, like, the movie would be top of the line. Because there we had a several hundred million dollar budget on the movie. And you got a special effects studio in, and it was kind of crazy how far they went. And that's the best we could do there. So the effects would be a problem. Mm-hmm. But I'm kind of thinking, like, in terms of what network would pick it up. And I think there's two elements to Avatar, which if it's not animation, don't go well together. And that's the fantasy element, and B, the kids. Like, that it has kids in it. Mm. So, like, all of Nick's live-action shows aren't, like, fantasy. They're all, like, iCarly or, like, Drake and Josh before. So you'd have to look to either, I think, an HBO for a fantasy show or something like a Fox, which tends to try out fantasy shows a lot. And then abruptly cancel them. But that's...
So, yeah, I was about to say, if we want the show to last, that's not a good idea.
Yeah.
So, I think... Sorry, go ahead.
You go ahead.
What you were saying about the kids aspect, I think that would definitely change if it was on HBO or Fox, because not as many kids watch that. You know, Nick is a very kids-oriented channel.
Like, HBO, I don't think there's a single, like, kids show on HBO. Like, what do you have, like, True Blood, Game of Thrones, Warlock Empire? There's not, like, a single kids show on HBO.
Not necessarily, like, the kids show element, but just the fact that they are kids.
Like, yeah, that's what I was saying. They would choose older actors.
That's also true, yeah. Either. HBO doesn't have any, like, shows with... Well, there are kids actors on some shows, but it's not predominantly. So, I think it's possible on broadcast. I think it's extreme. That would be extremely unlikely to ever happen. But I think maybe in some alternate universe, I think that could possibly happen, where we get like a 12-year-old main character.
Honestly, take a risk, like a show like Avatar: The Last Airbender, take such a big risk concerning like how much money they'd have to put into it. Like, I mean, Avatar: The Last Airbender is a pretty far out show, and it's like it could either win or it could fail very easily. So I don't know if it's a very smart marketing decision, which is why it's like impossible.
I mean, like, it's, yeah, the budget's a true thing too, but I mean, like, look at shows on Fox like Firefly. Like, I'm sure it was like not as big as a budget as an actual film, but it was actually not that bad graphic wise though.
No.
Yeah, yeah. It's not, the fantasy element would increase the budget, but it doesn't mean it has to be huge.
Yeah.
But Avatar is very, very effects heavy. Probably more so than Firefly, I would say.
Yeah.
So that would be, I guess we'd have reduced instances of bending to keep the budget down. I think that'd be one thing that would happen. And I guess what do you guys think of how the plot would change? Do you think it would be more episodic, less episodic in terms of the plot carries over episode to episode?
I think it would be like, honestly, I think the seasons would be way shorter, like maybe 12 episodes or maybe even 10 episodes. Because they're not going to want to do episodes like The Great Divide, just to name one, like just filler episodes. Because they're not going to want to waste money on something just to take you away from it. I don't know. I can't see them doing something like that.
Yeah. It also depends on the network partially, because like, with HBO shows, they tend to have hour-long episodes, so if it was something like, depending on which network it's on, if they do longer live-action shows, and most live-action shows, at least action shows or drama shows, do tend to be closer to the 40 to 50 to hour-long mark, and so the plot would have to change. Well, at least the way the episodes are plotted would have to change, inevitably.
Yeah, so let's look at some recent examples of fantasy shows on broadcast networks, I guess. And Terra Nova comes to mind right away, because that was last year. Apparently, Terra Nova had 11 episodes.
Did that get canceled, by the way?
I think, yeah, it did get canceled.
Oh, my goodness, okay.
Firefly was, I think, 12 episodes. That was like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
But I think there've got to have been ones that were 20-ish episodes long, so I don't know if it's that far out of the realm of possibility. But I guess what I'm trying to say with the plot thing, I think there'd definitely be more, it would be more action-oriented, which kind of contradicts what I said about there being less bending, so I'm not sure how that would work.
Hmm. More martial arts, I guess. I mean, you know, we saw that scene in the movie with the flow like water track, where they were not actually bending the elements, they were just doing the movements. And I think we'd end up seeing a lot more of that than the actual bending itself, which is a different complication in itself, because getting that many accomplished martial artists who can do that is not easy. I mean, some of the stuff, because I'm a martial artist, I've looked at some of the stuff they do in the show, that would take fourth or fifth degree black belt skill to do some of that stuff. So
that's an interesting point. I think that's probably true. And if they were focusing more on the martial arts, I think they would try to get this more of an Asian influence, maybe even more than Avatar does on its own, because I think that'd be interesting to a broadcast network. Maybe an Asian, because I mean, Firefly is half Asian influence, which is interesting. I think the action. How about the characters? How do you think some of the characters would change in a live?
I think that it'd be really interesting to see the casting, how they would cast all the actors and actresses and stuff. Because I don't want to get too, I mean, in depth into it, but Avatar. I think it'd just be really interesting the kind of actors they'd get for it and stuff.
Yeah, well, the kid casting process would be interesting and somewhat unprecedented. But if they cast, like, let's say they made it 17, 18-year-olds, which is probably more likely, it would be interesting. They would probably cast at least half the cast Asian,
to try to get it to work in the Asian, more Asian influence thing, and also to not offend people because they'd be more sensitive to that.
Yeah.
I think a characters that I think would translate well to like broadcast TV are Zuko, Sokka probably.
Yeah.
I think Aang would be an interesting lead character. I don't know if it would be the same if it was live action. I think it'd probably be different.
Well, Aang in season 3, more like, they'd probably have his character act more the way he does in season 3, just because live action shows main characters tend to be more serious. It's not as much comic relief or lightheartedness, at least not that I've noticed in most shows that I watch.
I think that the characters would be a lot less goofy, because you can't have Sokka have his noodle arms in a live-action movie. Well, TV series, what am I saying? In a TV series, you can't have them being as goofy and as ridiculous as they are, so obviously that's going to have to stop. So, which will probably lead to less comic relief in the show, and possibly just be an overall less funny show, so...
Yeah, I agree. Less humor-oriented, less lighthearted. They always seem more... These fantasy shows seem very serious on broadcast networks or even HBO. Less idealism, I would say. Like, I talked about Aang Katara that on the Storytelling Podcast whenever... This is how many ever months ago that was when this is on. So I think it's tonally would be different and stuff like that. But I guess, start wrapping things up. I guess that the root of this discussion, what about Avatar is exclusive to the animation format? And I know we've kind of talked about the bending and stuff already indirectly, like, to what wouldn't translate, but can you guys think of other stuff?
Well,
the anime effects.
Yeah, I was going to say
like
that.
Like in Boiling Rock with the heart eyes things with Sokka, you can't do that without, I mean, you could, but it would look ridiculous, you know?
How about some more bigger picture things?
I was thinking more like locations. Like, there's so much stuff. Like, the North Pole, the South Pole, all, like, the beautiful Fire Nation scene.
Well, you can do that all green screen, though. I mean, that's not too hard to do. Like, that can
But some of it, I think you're just going to lose some of the appeal, because you can't have them as unique in the Avatar world as you can in, like, a live-action TV series, because it would probably all have to be animated. Like, some of the stuff you just can't replicate, like Aang's iceberg, even.
Yeah, not only that, but since Avatar, just the basic story of Avatar is move from place to place, and most live-action TV shows don't do that, if you noticed. A lot of, even the big-budget ones, they tend to have they have set locations that they film in. It's kind of like a not as severe, kind of like how they do a lot of old sitcoms, where it's the same location over and over again. So just by its very nature, I don't know if Avatar: The Last Airbender would work very well as a live action show. I kind of think Legend of Korra would actually be much better, because there it's same locations over and over again. So yeah.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah,
I think that's definitely a good point. A travel show wouldn't translate. Even like Game of Thrones on HBO, which has a huge budget, still stays in the same places, mostly. But yes, I agree. I think Korra, I think, would make a better live-action show, and was kind of written that way, I would say, by Michael Mann.
Yeah, not only that, since the characters are older, that makes them work a lot better in live action, since we're talking about they'd have to make the characters, probably for casting, they'd have to make the Last Airbender characters older, which Legend of Korra, they're already older, so they can find whatever teen actors they want for that. So it'd probably, production-wise, I think that would be a much more appealing show for any studio considering making a live-action version of it.
Also, I think the humor in The Legend of Korra translates a lot better, because, you know, you get Bolin's humor isn't quite as in-your-face as Sokka's, right? It's more about what he says than what he does. So, I mean, I think that it wouldn't be nearly as goofy as Avatar: The Last Airbender.
I think both Bolin and Sokka would make pretty good live-action characters.
Well, you do everything with Sokka, though, is more. Like, maybe you can do half the stuff he does in the show, but the rest of it's kind of... I don't think it would translate too well.
Yeah, maybe. But I do think it's interesting with Korra, because the Korra has a very, the first season has a very specific plot to the season, which is something that we might not get if it was on broadcast, but if it was on HBO, which is kind of how Mike and Brian wrote it, then that's exactly what we would get, the plot of it. So I guess that translates for that. So we got the travel show, we have the bending stuff. Any more? What else, like, would you say is specific to animation? I don't know. This is kind of like the thing I wanted to turn to once at the core of this discussion, I would say. In Avatar or Korra, because Avatar was imagined as an animated show. It's like it was imagined, it was superficially created, I would say, is what I'm trying to say. The guy, Nick Exec, said, "I want a fantasy animated show for kids, a kind of like an epic scope thing," and Mike and Brian are like, "Okay, we can work with that," and they went out, set about creating it. So it was definitely all imagined within animation, so I think thus they inherently, it's going to be completely different if it's translated to live action.
Also, I just want to add something. Appa would be a problem. I don't know how they'd do that.
Well, yeah, that's a good point. That's the type of stuff
I'm
looking for.
And he's like he's a major player.
It's the animals would be hard to do in general.
I mean, in the movie, they didn't even really show the rhino half of the Komodo rhinos. They basically just made them giant Komodo dragons. So I also think some of the hybrid animals would be really hard
to get. Yeah. It would be a lot easier if they were just, you know, straight up earth animals, because then we could actually get animals, but no, they're hybrids, right? So
yeah.
I'd care.
Closing comments on this. Any other random thoughts on this? Anything related to the subject?
I guess one thing about Korra being a live action TV show is some of the darkness is already there, versus, like we were saying, Avatar would have to be more serious, you know? And Voice in the Night, you know, got some...
Yeah.
Yeah, Korra was definitely imagined more as like an AMC or HBO-ish type show, as Mike and Brian said in an interview. So I think they specifically included that type of stuff.
Well, yeah. They tried to emulate it after those movies, too.
Yeah, definitely. I think they just started watching more stuff like Game of Thrones, so that's why they started doing stuff like that. Okay. That's all, I guess, for this minicast. I've been your main host, Dylan. Mini hosts have been Ari, Colin, Derek, and Lem. I produced and edit the podcast. Dong Feng is owned by Jake. This is one of our shorter ones, but I was trying to make this a shortish minicast. Send us thoughts on this, I guess, but I don't know, this wasn't that interesting as I thought it would be. But yeah, anything you guys want to end on? Nothing. Nope. Okay, we're just gonna say bye then.
Live action? I don't know.
Whatever, say whatever you want. 1, 2, 3, bye.
Bye.
Live action. Bye.